The reason why we're all here tonight is to welcome our main speaker tonight, all the way from Santa Barbara, Darren Peet.
Hi, everybody. My name is Darren. I'm an alcoholic. Bloody hell. Those birthdays were fun, man. I love the energy and the fucking the love. This thing must work, right? It must work. I want to thank Glenn and Stan for asking me to come up here and give a talk to you guys. I love seeing all my friends from up this area. Too many to name. I'm going to get tongue-tied if I try it, but it's so good to see good friends here. You know, we got to do this thing together. That other guy talked about connection. It's all about connection, because this thing wants to isolate me and kill me. Period. That's what it wants to do. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm one of those annoying fucking happy people in AA. You are not going to like this if you're new. I wanted to kill people when I was new. I've been in my Alano club, and this woman, I'll never forget her name, she's all, "Hi everybody, my name's Betty and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic." And I stood up and said, "Screw you, Betty." Because I'm a pissed off, angry alcoholic, and I couldn't understand it. How can you be a grateful alcoholic? I was so mad with me. I was so mad. So angry. I hated you because I hated me. You know, I didn't know how to live, and I felt like things had been taken away from me and ripped. My soul was being ripped out. So I just wasn't a happy camper, and I'd be like on State Street in Santa Barbara and see these happy people. These ugly, happy people. "How the fuck are you happy?" And I want to kill myself. And I'm just seeing these people getting on with life, enjoying life. And I feel like I've just missed out on something. I've missed like the happy gene. And I was super resistant to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't come skipping into AA like high-fiving everybody, right? I wasn't on a winning streak or nothing. And I had such a preconceived notion of how depressingly boring AA is going to be. What's the point in going anyway? I already want to kill myself. I'm already feeling like suicidal on awakening. And the doctor's telling me to go, my mum, the family, my friends. "Go, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous." I'm like, oh my God, he's just trying to finish me off quicker or something. Like I'd seen it on the TV in England. And they got these really boring looking sober dances where there's three people in a big hall or something, you know, and it's just like, you know, what? I'm a party animal. I used to be a party animal. And now you're sentencing me to AA, like, you know, "Happy birthday to you." Like, fuck me. So I was so resistant. I don't know if there's any other party animals in here. I used to have a good time. Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be full of ex-party animals. I thought it was going to be full of boring bastards. Like I'd seen it on the TV shows, like with 14 guys in a circle and they're all miserably, boringly depressed. One of them's 2 weeks sober and they're all clapping. I'm like, fuck me. Now I got to go to AA, you know. Shit. So I was so resistant to this thing. I didn't know there was a program of action. Didn't know it could be full of recovered people, you know, normal-looking people, fun people. I didn't know it was going to be anything like this. So by the time I, like, went to my very first meeting, I was so far advanced with my alcoholism. If I had to go anywhere and do something really super weird, like interact with another human being or something, I had to have some fucking vodka in me. Just to feel calm enough just to be able to look you in the eye. Because I'm so weirded out by that point. You know, just human interaction was just beyond me. And I remember going to my very first meeting as a huge men's stag in Santa Barbara. I got out the yellow pages. You remember those things? I got out the yellow and I called the number and somebody answered and they said, "Yeah, go. There's a meeting tonight at 8 o'clock. Go down to the Veterans Hall," and I went down. I had enough vodka just to feel all right. And I went down there. I showered probably for the first time in about 8 weeks or something like this. And I went down to the meeting. And And it looked normal and it was vibrant and people were happy and they were interacting and they were coming in cars and stuff, you know. Some people had girlfriends and so the meeting's about to start. They're all sat in this circle. So I then, just as the meeting starts, I pull my vodka bottle out and start drinking. Everyone's like, holy fuck, is he drinking vodka in the meeting? And I'm like, why is nobody else drinking? I couldn't understand it. Isn't this Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you have a drinking problem? Am I at the wrong meeting here? But nobody said anything to me. They were just like, oh my God, you know. And I used to share that I stayed drunk in AA for my first whole year. First whole year. It took me 3 months to figure out, you know, that I'm not supposed to be drinking in meetings. 3 months of doing this all over town. And I used to share that I never got kicked out, but I did. I got kicked out a couple of times. One in, you know, the Alano Club when Betty was too happy. I got kicked out. Another time, they were talking about the solution like they always did, which was awesome. Like, and they were talking about God or higher power or psychic change. And I still had some fight left in me. So when they talked about God, I was all, screw you. Got out, old tough guy. Walked outside. Didn't nobody stop talking about God or anything like that just because Darren got a little bit ticked off. What happened is I went out there, presently tried the old game again. Alcohol kicked the living shit out of me. And I came back in and I went, what's that God shit again? I said, Darren, it's a God of your own understanding. You know, so I just had to be beat down and beat down. So after about 3 months, I figured out what you lot were doing. You were putting your vodka in a water bottle. He could have fucking told me. I didn't know. So before the meetings now, I'm pouring me vodka in the water bottle, being a bit of a gentleman. And I would wait for someone else to pull the water out. And as soon as I'd see him, I'd go, hey, yeah, oh, cheers. Yeah. I couldn't get 10 days, never mind, you know, 10 hours. I could stop. I was at a very far advanced stage of alcoholism, but I could stop if I got arrested. I stopped drinking, literally. If I went to the lockdown psychiatric unit, which happened regularly, I would stop. It's hard to drink when you're in 5-point restraints, you know what I mean? So I could stop. I just could not stay stopped at all. I just couldn't stay stopped for very long. So, you know, my first year in AA was just a hazy, hazy, weird mess. And I didn't know there was a program of action. I didn't know there were steps. I didn't know there were sponsors. I thought we are so much fucking, my language, so we're so bad out there. The whole point to AA is to come into these basement church meetings and stay out of the way for at least an hour and be good or whatever. Then we can go back out there with mayhem. I thought that was the whole point to it. Or sit miserably in a circle, hanging on one miserable minute at a time, you know. It had such a negative connotation to being sober and hanging on by a thread. And of course, some people do that in the rooms, and not everybody gets into action and gets into the program, and you'll figure that out, right? I started drinking at a pretty normal age. I was 13 years of age, and I thought that would get some gasps when I first started telling my story. Like, no one gives a shit. 13, you boring bastard. What's wrong? You know, what's wrong with you? Like, some people had already, you know, relapsed 10 times before that age, or some have been sent to Pelican Bay and done a 5-stretch, and they come back and they're 11 years old, you know, taking a 30-day chill. So you can't, what I realise, you can't outdo anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I'm not going to try and outdo you in my drinking story. This one woman, she was, I forget her name, but her story surrounded the fact that she was drunk in her mum's womb. I'm like, fucking alright, you win. I'm just going to leave. Why don't you give all the talks in all the AA meetings because you win? So fair enough. So you can't outdo anybody. But I started drinking. It was a fairly normal age. I'm drinking cider in the park, having a good time with my mates. And, you know, we're not supposed to do that, but we're doing it like most normal teenagers. The funny thing with us is in England, the drinking age for alcohol is 18, right? But the funny thing is, especially back then, there's no ID system, so to speak. Now, everybody doesn't have to carry ID. You just have to be 18 or look about 18. So when you think you've like got it, remember we were drinking in the park. I was 14, my mates were 15. And hopefully you've got a little thing going on at this point, something like that. And we had had a bottle of cider, so I'm fully charged up and I feel like Superman and hard as fuck. And I thought, I said, we're going into the pub. And we chose the hardest, toughest man's pub you could imagine. We kicked the door and we walked in, went straight up to the bar. And I said, I want a pint of Stella and I want the same for my five mates. And she kind of looked, she looked me up and down. Must have been this. She just looked me up and down, went, started chuckling. She went, okay. And turned around and served. And we just couldn't believe it. Like, because that meant you were in. That's the ID system. If the barman or the bar lady serves you, you are in the pub. So we were just loving it, loving life. We just took over that place. And I remember, we were in. So I remember a couple of weeks later, we went in again. We'd had our bottle of cider in the park and we went in again. And someone refused to serve me. And the lady, luckily, the lady was over there, said, no, he was here last week. And like, oh, okay, you know, that's the idea. Oh, he was in, all right, I'm in. So we were drinking in the bar from a very early age, which was phenomenal. It was good, good fun. So, you know, drinking for me was fun, thankfully. I hope it was fun for some of you guys, right? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to talk mostly about alcohol, but... You know, I did try cocaine once for 20 years. I love that shit. I love amphetamines. I love speed. I love coke. I'll do anything that lets me drink longer and try and be a funny little fucker in the pub all the way to the end of the night, you know. But I had a good time. Some people didn't have a good time, and I feel bad for you, you know. At least I had a good time for a little bit. You know, don't worry, it's going to get tragically awful towards the end where I want to kill myself. But I managed to have a bit of a good time, which was fine by me. And like I said, I was a party animal. I was known to be able to drink a lot. And I graduated school and went to college and then went to university. And I just, you know, drinking had taken an important, exhilarating part of my life, you know. When I graduated university, I thought I went to university basically to put real life off because I didn't want to be a grown-up and get a job and become a boring bastard, and I love to drink and do drugs. So luckily my brother came up with an idea for business, and he said, why don't you come back, we'll get in business together, and we'll give... He was 6 years older than me, and he's already this superb entrepreneur. And I'm like, okay, he's settled down, he's got a kid. So instead of going into being an instructor, I went back to Manchester and got into business with my brother. He's a fabulous businessman. I'm mostly like a bullshitter. They call that the marketing man, right? He's a businessman, I'm the marketing man. But together we made a powerful team. And we went into business and moved back into my parents' house so we could keep costs to a minimum. And I started it in my old bedroom. And the joke was, Darren, it just started to go really well. We were like in an insurance industry, but we'd rent out vehicles to people who'd been involved in an auto accident that wasn't their fault. So the joke was, Darren, you'll need some offices soon enough. And we got some great offices in downtown Manchester. And then you'll need a secretary. So I got a lovely young secretary. Then I got a lovelier younger secretary as things were going well. Within 2 years, or just under 2 years, we had outstanding invoices of almost $2 million. This thing just mushroomed. It just went super well. It was mostly because of my brother, but we did make a fantastic team. But what happened? So I'm in my early 20s to mid-20s now. We're doing it for a few years. I mean, we're employing 50-odd people. But alcoholism started to take its effect on me. And the best description I can give that is like something weird started to happen to me. Super weird. And I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know it was this soul sickness starting to creep in and just blacken me from the inside out, where I was feeling lonely or apart from. And I was starting to have anxiety. Do you remember anyone else here suffer from anxiety? No, not many. Oh my fucking God, that is the worst feeling in the world. So, and I don't know what's going on with it, because only during the day when I wasn't drinking. So when I'm sober, alcoholism started to kick my ass. I'd go out in the pubs at night time and I'm like Superman, cocky as can be. So I couldn't figure it out. And one time, you know, the banker watched with amused skepticism. I was whirling fat checks in and out of his account. And one morning, I'm in the bank on a Monday morning. I had to go into work this day because I'd taken the previous 15 Mondays off. So I'm in the bank. The walls are kind of it's freezing outside, but I'm in my suit and I'm just boiling and sweating. The walls are closing in. She's talking about me over there. The line's not fucking moving at all. And I know what's coming, you know, that anxiety, that nervous mental breakdown. I just don't know what to do. And I'm thinking, I don't know, and I can imagine if someone had just like turned around and looked at me and said, "Hey, what's wrong with you?" I'd be like, "Fuck, I don't know. Do you know? I don't know." And I just have to leave because you can't confront me like that. And I just, so I'm suffering miserably during the day. I haven't discovered the little cheeky morning drink yet. I'm just like miserably suffering at my own hand. I couldn't do my job because I'm full of fear and full of anxiety. You know, I've got Miss Manchester on my arm. I'm driving a sports car. I look good on the outside, but I'm just starting to die from the inside out. And I'm supposed to go to like this high-powered business meeting, and I can't get out of my car and go and do it. So I'd park in this alleyway, and I remember just sat there going, "What's fucking wrong with me? What's wrong with me? I just can't get out. I can't get out because I have to go and speak to this other man. He's in a powerful position. He's in a suit. I used to be good at that shit." He used to send me into any room and I'd say, "Hey man, the product you're selling is inferior to mine and mine costs less and what are we doing and look at this and sign the deal and we're good." I used to be able to do that all day long. Now I can't get out of my car. And I can't tell my brother what's going on. And he notices like Darren's not doing much these days, or Darren's missing, or have you seen Darren? So I'm just trying to fool everybody. And the biggest concern I have, even at that point in my alcoholism, the biggest concern is to make sure you, Kristen, as long as Kristen thinks I'm okay, I'm okay. Right? As long as Jeanette feels good of me, I'm good. So I'm running around trying to make sure you think I'm okay. That's already become my second full-time job. I can't even keep up with my own full-time job. Now I've got a second full-time job just making sure everybody thinks I'm okay. But I can't get away with that for long, you know. And what am I going to tell my brother, like, I don't know, something weird's happening to me. The drink's still working at night, and there's no way I'm giving it up, and you could never describe me as alcoholic. I'm a party animal, but something weird as shit's happening to me. So I can't tell him I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, my brother. I'm miserable all day, and I have one drink, and I'm fine, but then I overshoot the mark because of the allergy. You know, I can't. He thinks I'm suffering from something. He thinks I'm suffering from lazy bastarditis. Because he thinks I'm just fucking nowhere to be seen, right? It all comes to a head where we have a boardroom meeting. There's four directors in our shareholding company at this point. And I'm just not paying attention as usual until I hear him say, "So yeah, Darren, we're going to have to let you go." And I'm like, "Wait, what? We're going to have to let you go? What? Yeah, you're not doing anything, there's something wrong." I said, "I built this business up for me bedroom, you bastard." He said, "I don't give a shit, you're not doing anything." So I was furious. I just threw the chair out of the way. I went jumping over the table to give him a flying headbutt. I believe in good communication, you know. So I get tackled by the finance director and it's just an awful, ugly scene, right? I've been completely found out. Totally and completely just found out. It's like I was laying in bed naked and someone just pulled the covers. Whoop, there you go, there he is. There he is. Not a day's fucking work in him. Look at him. I just got found out. So I lost everything. It was a bad time to get fired. The shares were low and ended up getting a crappy check. I thought it was a crappy check to leave the car. I was just fired. I couldn't believe they could do it. I walked all the way home. It was the longest, most miserable day of my life. But all I cared about was, oh, shit, how am I going to spin this to my friends? Right? That's all I care about. So I go home. I'm miserable at home all afternoon. I've already arranged to go out that night. It's like a Thursday or something. So I get to the bar nice and early. I have a couple of stiff drinks. I've had the longest, most miserable day of my life. I have a couple of stiff drinks. And the old fierce determination to win comes right back. Right back. Here come my friends. "Hey, Si. Hey, Dave. Did you hear about that bullshit today?" I told my brother he's a wanker. I don't need any of those guys, right? And they bought it. They're like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, good for you, Darren. Yeah, I said, I can. They're like, they just bought it, and I was so relieved. I'm like, yeah, I can do anything I put my mind to. I used to be able to. I can do anything. I'm full of alcohol laws. I can do anything I want. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go travel. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to America, and I'm going to become president or something. Hey, that's not too far-fetched these days, eh? You never know. So I think the problem is England. The problem is my brother. He's a wanker. The problem is the girlfriend, right? So what happened is the problem got checked in onto a flight at Manchester International Airport, and they flew it all the way to LAX. And here I am. The problem is now in LA. I get picked up by my cousin. I've got two cousins who've been in Santa Barbara for 20 years. I didn't really know them. I was too young when they left. And I think I'm just going to hang out and party in Santa Barbara for a few weeks, right? Because I've got a check. I'm all right. I have no responsibilities. I love that. My cousin picked me up. First thing he does is lights a spliff. I'm like, yeah, I like America. It's pretty good here, right? Welcome to me. We drive back to Santa Barbara, and I just become a local really quick because I've got an inn. My cousin owns the English bar in downtown Santa Barbara. It's fucking perfect, right? And this guy's from Manchester. He's still got his Manchester accent. Everybody knows this man. He's such a wonderful guy. He has such a fun pub. And so within a few weeks, I'm just like a local. I know everybody. Everybody kind of knows me. And instead of staying for a couple of weeks, my visa allows me to stay for 3 months. And I fly home and I fly back with a friend. And I buy an SUV with some of my money. And me and my friend travel all around America for this wonderful 5-month trip. So we do like this. We're drunk in every town, every county, every state. And we do 12,000 miles. Everything a tourist would want to see. Back up the eastern board, back down the heartland. You know, by the time we get back to Santa Barbara, I've got 7 outstanding warrants in 5 different states. That means I had a good time, right? I'm also an illegal alien at this point. Whatever. What does that mean? I don't know. So I come back. I'm back in Santa Barbara. I have no income. I have pretty much no money. And I've become a daily drinker without even knowing it, right? I've no responsibilities, so I'm not too worried about being nervous or jittery in the afternoons and this and that. But now things are coming to a head. And my cousin comes up with this brilliant idea. It was genius. He said, why don't you become a bartender? I said, fuck. And I said, all right. That was the interview. I said, all right. He showed me. He said, this is a drinking man's pub. Don't worry about that cocktail bullshit and sex on the beach and all that shit. Show me how to pour a pint and how to do a shot of Jaeger. He said, you're in. You passed the test kind of thing. And what happens is I've become this drunk bartender. I'm a drunk bartender and I'm hanging on by a thread. By a thread. Now, how we survive what we go through, I'll never know. Normal people couldn't do what we do. Normal people couldn't do what we went through for a weekend. Right? Maybe not a day, but let's give them a weekend. They couldn't fucking pull a weekend off. I was hanging on by a thread for years. For years where I've started to have that sense of impending doom. Like, I wake up at this point and I'm in trouble. Anyone else identify with that? I'm waking up and I'm in trouble. And I've got that sense of impending doom. So, you know, I'm past the point where I can... So I'm allowed to have a couple of drinks at work as well, which makes it even worse what happens to me. It's the perfect job for me and the worst job for me, all wrapped into one. So, you know, but I would often overshoot the mark at work and I'd get in trouble from the boss. I'd say, Darren, you can have a couple of drinks, but you're not allowed to get wasted. I heard you got drunk again. Sometimes there's two bartenders and I'd get too drunk and he'd cover me a little bit, but word I would always get back. I was in trouble the whole time I was working there for a couple of years. I don't know how I pulled it off because sometimes I'd be on a shift during the midweek and it's a quiet shift. I'd be slumped down on the chair sometimes. I'm so drunk. I'd be the drunkest person in the bar. And I'd be thinking, why is he serving him? The locals are serving each other because I'd overshot the mark again. I'm thinking, this isn't good. But they're so nice about it. And they were even taking money off each other. And well, there's a $5. Isn't a pint of lager $4, he'd say. Yes, but put it in his tip jar. I'm thinking, that's jolly fucking good of him, that, you know. So I'd wake up the next morning and I know I'm in trouble and I got a shadowy recollection of some bullshit going on last night. And did I lock the bar? Did I close it? You know, I'm just always in a panic. Always in a panic. And I'm way past the point where, like, usually I could drink all weekend and it would be fun, but I'm so bad on a Monday morning. I'm so bad. It used to take me one whole day of complete isolation, no human shit going on, right? Complete isolation. And then maybe the next day I'd go, oh my God, that was weird. Right, who wants a drink kind of thing, right? Now I was way past that. It was taking me 2 or 3 days of isolation to just calm me down. So I was drinking on my days off just to feel okay, and then I had to get drink at work. So I remember thinking, I'm just in this fast lane, man. And a typical day now would be, like, I'd come to in the morning, knowing I've screwed up the night before maybe. I'd come to in the morning, my bedroom's just this mess. I'm living in a shitty backside of the house with its own entrance. Like, I'm walled off. No one wants nothing much to do with me. And I'd come to, and I'm just in a panic and I'm in trouble. I got a sense of impending doom, trying to piece it together last night without working. I think I'm going to have a nervous mental breakdown. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't care, shit, as long as it's not a Wednesday, because I've got to go to work on Wednesday. Please don't be, oh my fucking God, it's Wednesday. And it's 9 a.m. It's 9:10. I've got to be at work at 10 a.m. Holy shit, what am I going to do? But now at least I've got a bit of a plan. And my plan is this. I've got to jump in the shower, get ready, get on my bike, bomb it down State Street. Because I'm going to go to the Irish bar to have a cheeky little drink, to go to the English pub and go to work, right? Logic. Who doesn't like a bit of logic? So now I'm at such a state of anxiety and I'm so depressed and just don't know what's going on. As I'm bombing it down State Street, I've decided I'm going to kill myself at least 5 times on the way down. Just veer off into this truck. There's a truck coming the other way, a delivery truck as well. How ironic. Just bomb into front of that truck and just end it all, right? Because that's the point we get to. I'm just like, just finish it all now. I'm hanging on by a thread and I change my mind so many times, but I make it to Dargan's. And I've done this scenario so many times. I'm going to put my bike there. I know who's working in Dargan's. It's Yvonne, the lovely Irish gal. But I'm consumed with, I just got to make this look normal. Because I'm weird. I know I'm fucking weird. I just don't want her to think I'm weird. Right? So I put the bike there and I walk in the pub and she's there and she's going to think this is weird. And do I look all right? Because I know I'm not thinking all right. I'm thinking on this higher plane. Do you remember that? We're on a higher plane. Oh, shit. Is she? No, I don't know. I've already ingested so much hard alcohol at this point. I've literally ruined my wiring. It's ruined. There's no coming back. I know that. Imagine being the entrepreneur, doing an office job. Fucking no chance. So I'm already weirded out. So I go in there, I open the bar and I go in and Yvonne's in there like cleaning the pumps or some shit. I never clean nothing in my bar, but she's cleaning. So I walk in there and trying to look good and she sees me, here's the door. I say, hey, Darren, Jesus, how you doing, young fella? I'm like, hey, Yvonne. Hey, I'm all right, but I feel a bit rough. I went out last night. I shouldn't have gone out. I drank a bit too much. I think I've got a cold as well. I'm just dying. And I got to go to work and she says, would you like a pint? I said, fuck yes, I'd like a pint. So now it's her idea, right? Fucking, you fucking weirdo. Yeah, I'll have a pint, yeah. Well, I'm thinking, I'm looking all nice. I'm thinking, well, hurry up then, for God's sake. And she takes forever. She turns around to walk 3 feet back there to pull the pint. Just like, oh my, I've changed my mind 15 times. In my mind, I've run out of the bar and run under a truck. 15 times. Waiting for that bitch to walk 3 feet. 3 feet to pour a pint. So she pours it. And she'd glance around at me and I'm thinking, I'm all, you know, as long as she thinks I'm all right. She pours the thing, she brings it right back to me, she puts it right in front of me, and she looks right at me because she wants to fucking chit chat or some shit. I just want to pull my knife out and stab her in the neck. Fucking, she dead. Fucking, get her out of my way. I can have me pie. But it hasn't quite done the job. The pie hasn't quite. Oh my God. And fuck, I've got to go to the pub. And she's looking at me. I'm thinking, does she know? Does she know how weird I am? And oh my God, she says, Darren, would you like a Jaeger? I said, fuck yes, I want a Jaeger. Right now as well. Hurry up. She give me a Jaeger. She gave me the biggest bartending Jaeger you've ever seen in your life. And she puts it in front of me. And I slam that thing down, glug that thing down, glug that thing down. Oh, hey, fucking cool, like Superman already. Now I'm going to go off to my bar. I'm going to come back on my break and shag Yvonne now. No problem. Suit by Cool and Luke now. So I go to work. I go to work. I drink too much. I overshoot the mark. The next day, I got that phone call that me coming for 2 years. I look at my phone, 6 missed calls. Oh, God, the phone rings again. It's the boss. Get down here now. Right now. It's like, oh, my God. I go down to the bar and I get fired. I'm crying my eyes. Raph, no, don't do it. You're gone. Should have fired you a year ago. Something wrong with you, mate. I know, but I don't. You need to go back to England. You need to go to detox. You need to do something, but you can't have anything to do with this place. He said, you can come in as a customer, but you are fired. The next day, I went back to that bar, angry as can be, to see who took my shift so I could throw a pint over him. Right, I've become this miserable angry drunk. All bets are now off, you know. I got barred from my own bar that next day, and within 2 weeks I got barred from every downtown pub. James Joyce, O'Malley's, Old King's Road. The Sportsman is very hard to get barred from. It took me a week. I got barred from the Sportsman. And my world just became like super super small at this point. No one wanted nothing to do with me. It was just like the tipping, but I just went like a ski jump, just straight down. And I'm so miserably depressed, and I don't know what to do. Now I'm just like drinking just to hang on there. So the drinking bar days are over. No one's seen me for the longest time. I'm just stealing booze and drinking at home now. I'm living in this place. It's awful. I haven't been paying rent. I couldn't pay rent, so, you know, because I'm not a functioning alcoholic. I've no income and I can't pay rent. So my sponsors reminded me that's squatting, you know, you're pretty much squatting. I'm supposed to do the dishes and clean the kitchen. I'm supposed to do the gardening. I can't even do that. And I'm stuck at home. I can't do that. I'm so anxious and I'm so nervous. I can't even do that. So they want to get rid of me, but I just outstay my welcome. And, you know, a typical day for me now. I haven't seen anyone for the longest time. I've started getting arrested. I've started going to the lockdown psychiatric unit. I'm just an absolute mess. So a typical day for me now is I'd come to, and it's pitch black outside, and I've no idea whether it's fucking night or day. I'd figure it out. Oh my God, it's 5 a.m. And what's ahead of me is just the longest, most miserable day of my life. And I would wait for as long as is humanly possible before reaching under my bed for the strong, horrible, cheap vodka. And after about 10 minutes, because I'm starting to panic already, I know I'm going to have a nervous mental breakdown. I'm hearing voices. It's pitch black outside. I'm hearing voices. My mind's going already. I know the vodka's under me. It was like a science project at this point, because under my bed's a big bottle of vodka with that much in it. It's like a science project. Every morning I'll need it. But I don't want to drink it because I've been doing this for as long as I can remember. And the voices are at the end of the bed and I'm interacting with them and they're saying things like, oh, he's awake, get up, he's awake. Told you you'd lose that bad job. I'm like, yeah, I know, fuck, I know. You're going to lose this place soon enough too. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, hang on a minute, I fucking know all this, but how do you know all this? Like, I'm just chit-chat. And I'm hearing my name, Darren. Darren, what? Outside. I'm just losing my mind. So I'd grab the vodka and I'd chug it down just to not kill myself, right? Not to be a party animal or Superman, just to know I'm not going to kill myself right now. A few weeks prior to that, I've had a gun in my mouth just to see how it feels, feel the weight of it. Do I do it like that? Do I do it like that? I've stood on a bridge before now, never mind going under the delivery trucks, you know, it's always been on my mind. So I'd finished that vodka just to get enough wherewithal, because now I know what I'm going to do. I do it every single day. I've got to wear the baggy clothing because I'm going to go and steal 3 big bottles of vodka from Foodland, the liquor store, 1 block away. And if I don't get arrested between here and there, that's going to be an okay day. So I'd put the clothes on. I remember walking to the store one day and I caught myself in a big shop front window mowing along. I haven't seen anyone for the longest time. And I look at myself and I'm like, holy shit. And my hair's everywhere. I'm super thin, little big bushy beard. Sometimes I find me breakfast in my beard kind of thing. And I just remember thinking, oh my fucking God, I better not tell anyone about that. And I just keep going. I go to the store, I steal 3 big bottles of vodka, I clink off back home to my house. Then I start drinking. And I can't just like get wasted and pass out, which you want to do really. I can't do that. No, it's like a science project, man. I gotta drink enough just to keep going and just to maintain, just to make it through the afternoon, maybe get into the evening, maybe get to 11 o'clock or midnight to maybe catch a good enough sleep to maybe wake up and not have to do that again. And he says, the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms. I drank like that for 2 more years. 2 more years of 2 to 3 big bottles of vodka a day. I don't know how I survived it. I don't know. Here's what happened my first day of sobriety. I remember I'd been going to AA for a year at one point, and I just couldn't get it. I didn't know what was going on. This one morning I woke up and it's pitch black outside. There was no vodka under my bed. I couldn't believe it. It never happened to me before, and I took it as a sign, okay, today's the day you're going to kill yourself. No big deal. Jails, institutions, and death. The only 3 outcomes, right? I'd done 2 3/4 of them. I wanted to die. Death, kill me now. Right? You can't scare an alcoholic with death at this point. You can't scare us with death. Alcoholism, though, doesn't have the dignity to take you quickly. It's going to mess with us for a long time, sometimes decades. My fear is not dying an alcoholic death. My fear is living an alcoholic life. Right? So that, you know, so what am I going to do? I'm going to kill myself. So there's a calmness about me. I stay in the bedroom for hours, like it's like till 10 a.m. just thinking how best to do it and blah, blah, blah. I know it's going to kill me, Mum. That gives me another hour of deliberation. Fuck, I got to do it. Then I jump in my car. I drive up the pass over to Cold Springs Bridge, where I've stood on before. This is before the suicide rails. Yeah. Park the car, walk to the middle of the bridge, and you know, I'm contemplating it. Some guys are honking the horn, thinking, what's going on? Is he a tourist? Is it weird? And I'd been going to meetings this time, and one time a guy had really called me on my bullshit, because I'd shared in a meeting how everything sucks, AA's crap, I'm going to kill myself. He just pulled me off to the side and said, listen, stop sharing bullshit like that. You don't know anything. You might kill yourself, fair enough. You won't be the first person to do it. But you can't say you give AA a good go. I said, what are you... I got so angry. I said, what are you talking about, old man? I've been coming to AA for a year. He said, well, first of all, why don't you come sober? It works better. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. And he said, and a drunk like you, you need to go through the book with another man. You need to go through the first 164 pages and the 12 steps. And you need to get a psychic change to have a sufficient awakening to recover from alcoholism. And I'm all, screw you, he's all, screw you. And off I toddled, you know. And I'm thinking all this on the bridge, and I'm so angry. But I know it's the truth. I had a dirty little secret in AA that whole time. You lot were talking about sponsors and stuff, and you lot were talking about the steps, and I was doing nothing of the sorts. So I'm on the bridge, and it's almost like a third step. I'm like, okay, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back to that AA bullshit. I'm going to do those stupid ass 12 steps. And when they don't work, I'm going to go and find that man. We're going to have a little chit chat. Probably take him off the bridge with me, right? So I get in my car, drive all the way back down the pass. I can't just come skipping into AA like. I'm probably need a medical detox. So I drive all the way down the pass, back to the emergency ward room, and park in my usual spot. Right there. I hit a car as I'm parking. Like, oh my God, and the security of the police are already there, they're around the corner, it's the emergency room. So they come over, and I'm calm as can be. It's about 11 a.m. now. I'm like, sorry, so yeah, that was my fault. I got my ID, and there's, you know, but I've got some health issues. I need to go into the hospital. And there's two cops, and one of them's really mean, and one of them seems to be like, just seeing what's going on. And the mean one straight comes up to me and says, have you been drinking? I said, that's a weird first question. No, have you? Don't try this at home. And he's like, I smell alcohol. I said, well, I haven't had a drink. He said, we need to do some field sobriety tests. And the cop behind him is almost rooting for me, like, just thinking, what's fucking going on here? I do all the field sobriety tests perfectly. Pisses him right off. He said, well, I still smell alcohol. I said, I don't give a shit. He said, well, we're doing some more. I said, okay. I do it all perfectly. The other guy's just watching like, what is going on here? He said, you need to blow into this thing, young man. So I blow into his machine, and I blow a 0.32.
No.
I haven't even had a drink yet.
No.
I'm waking up at a 0.32, and then I'm drinking 2 to 3 big bottles of vodka. Now, I see, they cannot believe it. They're just astounded. And I'm seeing, like, what's going on. And then I see him get his handcuffs off, and then I start to panic. I'm like, wait, whoa, what are you doing? I said, turn around so we can put the out. I said, no, fuck. If you take me to jail right now, I will kill somebody. I said, I'm small, but I'm fucking dangerous, man. I can only imagine DTing in jail again. Oh, my God. And I start to use some of our language, and I start to say, listen, sir, you know, I'm an alcoholic, actually, but I have not had a drink today, sir. But I'm an alcoholic, and you know, again, don't try this at home, you know. I need to go to the lockdown psychiatric unit, sir. They got a file on me in there. I've been there 4 times this year, and it's only April. And I'm going like this. For some reason, they arrest me, but they don't take me to jail. Thank God. They put me in the squad car and they take me to the police station, but now we're good friends, right? Now we're good friends. I'm cuffed in the back and we're having a good time. We're having a laugh because I know where I'm going eventually, back to probably detox a little bit. And they radio ahead and they say, fuck, we've got this Irishman. And he's a point. I said, I'm English, you moron. They take me to the police station. They take blood because they can't. They're saying, this guy's talking and walking. He's normal. And it goes, they take blood and it goes to a 0.34 or something, like, oh fuck, leave it at a 0.32. I'm there for a few hours, 4 or 6 hours. Somebody they know and trust comes and picks me up. It takes me back to the lockdown psychiatric unit. But so what? I've done that so many times, so what? Now, the psychiatric unit, the lockdown place, it doesn't sound too fun, right? But I fucking love that place, right? It is a bit like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I suppose, but for your older ones in here. But, you know, I know what's going to happen. They're going to pump me full of drugs. They're going to pump me full of drugs. So I've gone from this, like, I'm a trembling, nervous, despairing wreck to a man brimming over with self-reliance immediately, right? Now I can start judging people right away. You know, I've been put in that place because I want to kill myself and I want to kill you, but I'm loaded full of drugs and I'm feeling like fucking Superman. And I go into the day room and I see some girls doing laps around the couch and I'm like, fuck, I'm going to shag her later. There's a guy over there watching his reruns of thing. I'm going to take him for a drink. You know, I'm just out of my gills and I love that place. I'm like, who wants a Valium? I love a Valium. Who wants a Valium?
Yeah.
I run to the window. I said, you haven't said Valium in 2 fucking minutes. Who wants a Valium? You know, I'm just loaded out of my gills. They're safely detoxing me from alcohol, and then they'll safely detox me from the drugs, and then they'll pop me out one more time sober. But so what? The only difference is this time I came out on a Wednesday afternoon and I knew I was going to go to the Junkyard Dogs Wednesday night, because that was one of several meetings where the men were properly armed with the facts, right, Stan? Properly armed with the facts about themselves. They were some of them were just as bad a drunk as me, some worse. And they were coming to meetings in the car and they had girlfriends and these fabulous recovery stories. I just didn't understand. So I went to the Junkyard Dogs and there's 80 tough looking guys outside of here. And I went straight up to Mike. I could have asked one of a dozen or more people. And I went, Mike, I'm going to drink tonight. You know it. I know it. What do I need to do? He said, well, Darren, you know, let's get into action. Let's do a prayer. Normally we do some reading. We do 60 pages, ABC. Let's do a third step prayer. I said, what, in front of all these men? He said, yeah. I said, okay. The no had been beaten out of me. I wasn't cool anymore. I wasn't fucking cute anymore. I was going to kill myself. You want to do a prayer? Let's do it. I'd been beaten into a state of reasonableness. We did the prayer. We went into the meeting. It was a great meeting. Someone had a seizure in the meeting right behind me. It was such an eye-opening moment. It's one of the most awful seizures you could ever see, where the guy's just tightening up and he's going purple and until he stopped and then fell off his chair. I'm just I've had seizures before. I've just never seen one, you know. I'm like, fucking that's ugly, that thing. Oh, ugly. And so the meeting, we have the meeting, it's great. We ship him up, we call, you know, the ambulance comes and picks him off. And so we have the meeting, it's great. And my sponsor says, you better go home and start your fourth step, or else that third step means nothing. So I went home and he told me how to do it, and I wrote 100 names. I woke up at 5 a.m. the next day. I went to the shaking and baking. I went to the beach and wrote 100 more names. And I called him at 6 a.m. And he answered the phone. Always chokes me up. He answered the phone because he knew. He knew, and he gave me the next direction. And I called him again after I'd done that column. I called him 12 times that day to finish all three inventories. And the magical thing about that is this man was playing in a qualifying round of the US Open. I didn't know that. He's about to tee off and he's with his buddy. The phone would go and he'd say to his mate, oh, it's Darren, can I take it? And the other guys in the program say, yeah, let other guys go through. Go off to give me direction on the phone. Unfucking believable. Never repay this man. The next day I shared my fifth step with him. And right at the end he said, Darren, we always leave shit off. It's not a good or a bad thing. It's like, you are going to drink again thing. I said, oh, God damn it, Mike. There's this and there's this. And he stood up and gave me a hug. I said, I'm glad you're feeling all right. I feel like shit. So don't worry. Trust in the process. Go home and do your hour and give me a call later. We did 6 and 7 the next day. And then I transferred my list. And then I added to my list. On my fourth or fifth day, I went around Santa Barbara and made 21 amends. I was rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. Everything just seemed to make sense. My heart filled up. I'm very non-religious, of the typical God thing. I'm into a power thing, a universe shit, whatever. The sun sets, that's good enough for me. My heart filled up and I was like, oh my God, this is what they're talking about. This is probably even why my mum went to church every Sunday. And I couldn't stand that shit. But she must have got some kind of feeling like this. And I knew it was like the inside joke. I'm only going to get the inside joke if I do that work and I get that feeling. So I was so enamored with the process. I went downtown the next day and did 12 more. I went into Foodland, the liquor store. I said, I need to speak to the manager. I said, listen, mate, I live one block away and I'm a bad drunk. I've stopped drinking now, though. And I said, I've stole a lot of vodka from your place. I said, it was cheap, shitty vodka, but it was a lot of vodka. I said, I'm living my life a completely different way. I'll never steal from you or anyone else ever again. I've summed it up, and err on the side of caution for you. It comes to $2,750. I just started work the other day. It's Friday. Here's $25. I'll be back every Friday with $25 to pay off the whole amount and any interest you determine. So is there anything else I can do to make this right? And he went, wow. And I went, wow. And I floated off and made some more financial amends. Said to me, sponsor, what's fucking next? He said, 10 and 11. I'll show you what to do in the morning, what to do at night. I'll show you prayer and meditation in the mornings. If you want the guaranteed version, that is, Darren, you can mess with it all you want, leave something out. But if you want the guaranteed permanent sobriety, do some form of meditation. I started with 1 minute. It's taken me 14 years to get to 10 minutes. God loves a tryer, right? He don't give a shit that I'm not doing it right. I just do it. I try it. Not to be a goody little two-shoes, just because I need to stay sober more than I can breathe. So I started off on a journey. And he says, here's what you do at night. You know how long it takes? 2 minutes. 2 minutes. So I was in. I was sold on the plan outlined in this book. I went back to my home group, a recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like a little fucking madman, running round to people going, oh my God, what's it like? And someone go, yeah, man, it's great. And I go to this other guy, he's miserable as fuck, 18 months sober, and he's like, wait, like, not everybody's going to do the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's fine. I have to do it. I have to work. I'm the kind of person, I don't know about you, some people, like, even in, can go to one meeting a week. And they're happy as fuck. Everything's good. They're all spiritual and shit. All right, good for them, right? Good for them. I just can't do that. I have to be into action, man. I have to chop wood and carry water. I love doing things like this. It's fun. I'm glad you got double doors there to get me big fucking head out of this room. I love doing this. But I've got to do the. I've got to shake hands at my home group. I've got to have commitments. I've got to sponsor guys. One meeting a week won't work for me. I've got to do the whole enchilada. I've got to do everything. I don't know which bit works, so I'm just going to continue to do it all. And if I ever get off my game, I just start to. I'm not going to drink tomorrow. The drink is coming if I don't do this weird, wonderful shit. But tomorrow, I'm not going to get drunk, but I become an instant arsehole. I don't know about you guys. Yeah. By day three, I'm angry as fuck. There's like some. This alcoholism is cursing through my veins. I've got to work a very good program just to be normal. I'm doing so much shit, I thought I'm going to become the fucking Dalai Lama or some shit. I've got to do all this stuff just to be normal. Just so when I'm at work, so imagine two people talking about me. Do you know Darren? Who, the English guy? Yeah, Darren. Yeah, he's all right, him. I'm doing all this just so they'll say that. Yeah, he's all right, him. Fucking hell. Some are sicker than others, you know. I've just got to keep trotting along, but I've got to be into action. Now, if you don't have to do that, good for you. I just have to do that, or else I'm going to lose my mind. And it's like I need a round of applause for everything, me. I'm like an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I'm all over the place. But it's like I need a round of applause. Like, I'll get home sometimes. If I'm not into action, and like I get home before my wife, and I'll go into the kitchen, see my lovely little dog, Bex. I love my dog so much. She's running around. I go in the kitchen, and all the dishes, they haven't been done. That's her fucking commitment, not mine. So what am I going to do? I'm going to get into action, though. So I do all the dishes, I wash them all nicely, but I don't dry them like a normal person and put them away. She might not spot that shit, right? So I spread it all over the kitchen. So then I can go back into the living room, get on the couch. So she'll come home from work to walk past me and go, hello, love, and I'll go, hi, babe. Walk past me as you go into the kitchen, because I'm like a little kid. So then she can come out and go, did you do the dishes? I'll be like, yeah, that was me. I did the dishes. Sometimes I get home before her and I pull the Hoover out. Get the fucking Hoover out, I'm telling you. I give you something, you know, I give it a quick once over, but I can hear her coming, so don't put the Hoover away. Boom, right in the middle of the room. I run into the bedroom with my dog on the bed, like something like this, ready for the round of applause. And she goes in to be astounded by the Hoover. Oh my God, she comes into the bedroom. Did you do it? Yeah! I did the Hoover. I need a round of applause for doing 8 hours in a works day, you know? It's a nightmare. So I just got to chop wood and carry water. I'll finish with this. I've had so many amazing spiritual moments happen. Like, ask anybody that's stuck around a bit. Not just the odd one here and there. So many astounding spiritual experiences. It's just unbelievable. And all the times in between are not so bad either. Shit happens. Life happens. I was 5 years sober. My wife got sentenced to 6 years prison in Chowchilla. Fucking no joke. Shit happens. My job's just to be spiritually fit enough just to maintain and be able to get through the tragedies and the good times. I used to get mostly loaded when things were going good. I've just got to make sure I'm still on the path, right? But I'm at a conference one time years ago in the Bay Area, and we're on the desk up at the top of the room, and everybody's out there about to give a talk, and the lady next to me is doing 10 minutes. I've never met her before, but she's on her phone, and I'm getting pissed off she's on her phone. It's a bad example. What are you doing on your fucking phone? She, who I've never met before, is texting her sponsor in LA, right? I'm from Santa Barbara. She's up here with me, texting her sponsor in LA. She's in communication with an old sober buddy who's in Hawaii, right? I'm like, what's up? She says, oh, my sponsor's having a problem with a good friend. Do you know anyone in Santa Barbara? I said, yeah, I'm from Santa Barbara. We'll give him my number. We'll figure it out. So we do that. We do our thing. We give our talks. Everything goes great. Wonderful day. Then we're flying home on the freeway, me and three of my toughest sponsees, all tatted up and shit, and prison guys, you know, proper hard men. And we're flying home, we're all feeling spiritual. And I'm like, oh shit, I gotta call that guy. So I call this man, it's on speakerphone, it's ringing. He answers the phone and I said, hey, my name's Darren, I've just met somebody you know or something, I was told to give you a call back. He just starts crying his eyes out. And we're all looking at each other, just choking up. I'm like, is he fucking crying? Because I think I'm gonna cry in a minute. my mate's not crying. Like, we wait for this man just to gather his thoughts. And like, I said, it's all right, man. We understand what's up. He said, I've been sober 21 years. I got sober, and at 2 months sober, I moved to Maui, Hawaii. And I said, I'm a good AA person. I've never asked for anything Alcoholics Anonymous. The only thing I've ever prayed for is if and when my two boys need Alcoholics Anonymous, the hand of AA will be there. I said, listen, man, I'm not all that and a bag of chips, but I'm a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll do anything I can do for you. What's going on? So I got a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old, and they're dying of alcoholism. He said, they attend Santa Barbara City College. I said, I work at Santa Barbara City College. It's like we have entered the world of the spirit. Unbelievable. I go back to Santa Barbara and find those two young chaps, and one of them's doing great and one of them's dying of alcoholism. The yin and the yang of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not all of us get it, but how lucky are we, the ones that are here right now with a moment to get it. Anybody in here can become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anybody. 30 days sober, 3 years sober. That's if you're still a little miserable or a little bit depressed or disconnected and wondering what's going on and why are they happy and why am I not. Anybody can become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it's one of the biggest compliments I can give you is active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? Because we know what that means. And if you're struggling with the God thing like I was, you know, you might think religion might be for people that are trying to avoid going to hell. But spirituality is for people that have been to hell. And I identify with that. Thank you very much.
All right, let's give Garrett another round, huh?